This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Raise Your Game. I'm Christine Wong. Everyone is different, but because of that, sometimes in work and in life, you have to learn how to navigate conflicting personalities. How do you balance and compromise for different points of view? And how can opposing values come together for a common purpose? I have Xiao Cheng Wong, Fellowship Manager of Acumen Academy Malaysia, here with me to discuss just that.
Thank you, Christine, for having me. So I'm Xiao Cheng. I'm the Fellowship Manager from Acumen Academy. And Acumen is a global impact investment fund, an NGO that changed the way the world tackles poverty through investing through organization, via patient capital, as well as investing in leaders. And with the investment on leaders and people who believe in doing the right thing for the world, we have Acumen Academy. So in the academy, we have the fellowship program as well as some online courses. And we introduce tools to transform, to equip people with the tools and knowledge to know how to be an effective change maker in the work that they do.
Right. So what we're going to be talking about today is something that you call managing polarity. First of all, tell me why you wanted to talk about this today.
So we are living in a world that is increasingly polarized. And we all know that social media, and it's such a powerful tool that can actually influence people's mind. And managing polarity is a tool where we can learn how to work across differences and learn that it is not, so when you are facing opposing values in tension, it is not a problem to solve. It is an energy system, we call it at Acumen, to manage. So very often when we are stuck in a situation where we find ourselves very strongly standing firm on one side of one value, and we find the opposite parties holding very strongly the opposite values, and we are caught into thinking that the other person is the villain in the story.
Right.
And the truth is, it doesn't have to be like that. So what polarity teaches us is, when you have two parties holding different values, we need to recognize that both values are important, and both values have positive outcomes that can contribute to the common goal, the shared goal that we all want to achieve. For example, let's talk about the workplace. We are faced with inclusivity and decisiveness. So if you want to be an inclusive workplace and you want to take in a lot of people's input and feedback before you make a decision, and then versus if you have a culture that is very decisive, people will think that you are top down, but actually you can make decisions very fast. However, sometimes you find people who are champions on either one of this. And we need to realize that managing polarity teaches us that it doesn't have to be just either one. It can be both, and you can serve the common purpose.
So, okay, that's really interesting, first of all, to acknowledge essentially that just because someone has the opposite values that you have doesn't mean that they're wrong necessarily or that they're bad people, you know, and first of all, learning how to sort of unlearn that protagonist-antagonist mentality. But I want to, first of all, go back to the term polarity itself. What exactly does that refer to? What is it defined as right now?
Sure. Polarity basically is a term that we call that defines when you have two opposing values that are in working in tension. So let's say you experience an education where you sit in rows in a classroom and there's a teacher in front of you teaching, versus in some parts of the world where classrooms are designed to be in a round table where you work in groups, you do lots of activities. So seeing these two, what are the differences? If we go one level deeper, what is the values? What are the values each one is holding? So one is holding freedom, flexibility, and the other is holding structure, order. And these are the values that we're talking about. So in a lot of differences that we see in lives, they are very often come from a fundamental values that the society or the people behind it holds.
So first of all, I think that definitely there is an element, I suppose, of what I think in media and fiction is called protagonist-centered morality, right? Where, you know, you relate to characters in books and film and movies because they think the way you think, or you root for them because of their values, and because of that you're rooting for them and against, you know, whoever else is in that movie, right? Or book or whatever. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of other media that then flips that on its head, where maybe the villain has a point, you know, or maybe you're only thinking of them as a villain because you're seeing them through, like, the protagonist's eyes and stuff like that. So I think that's, like, kind of a way to look at this, where if we're all the protagonists of our own stories, we have to understand that our views are not the only views that exist. And to understand the catalyst from which other people's opposing views have come from, right? And, you know, what is the root of that? And how could that maybe serve us in, I guess, a productive manner?
Yeah, correct. Mm. But I do want to say that so when we are talking about values and tensions, we are talking about two good values.
Yeah.
So we won't put, say, corruption on one end. Yeah. That's totally bad, right?
That's just right out.
Yeah. Murder is not a value. You know? So,
I love that we have to clarify. That's not cool. just to be sure. But yeah. But like you said, you know, even taking that thing of order versus chaos, right? I think that, you know, you look at that from a very flat perspective, it's like, okay, order good, chaos bad. But that's not the case, you know? Order can be a structure, but it also can be a level of inflexibility, inability to deal with change. Chaos can be, you know, messy, but it can also be creativity and, you know, entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, so there's like that kind of balance, right, where it's not necessarily good or bad one way or the other.
Yeah, so what you have just described is basically, let's rephrase chaos to say flexibility.
Sure, sure.
Because it has the negative connotation to it for the word chaos,
yeah,
for some people. So what you have just described is basically both values, you have just said that they have the opposite.
Mm.
They have the positive side of things. So when you have order, you know how to meet your expectations, you know, very clear guidelines, so on and so forth. Whereas when you have, yeah, you just describe the positive side, right?
Mm.
And you have also just described what is the negative thing. So
yeah.
What happens at polarity is basically when you do too much of one thing, you will not just experience the positive side, but you will start experiencing the downside of the value.
Right.
So when there's too much order, people are basically checking out because it's top down, they become yes men, and people start leaving the organization, so on and so forth. But when there's too much flexibility, there's no accountability, roles and responsibilities are just vague, and people start to get confused and have lots of arguments, and eventually people also leave the organization.
Right.
So you don't want to experience the negative sides of both. And very often what we see is that when an organization swings too much to one side, and they will start to make, they realize that, hey, we need to course correct.
Mm.
And then they take a very drastic change,
right,
to say, let's swing to the other end. And very often this happens is when, let's say, the management change, and someone come in and realize that, hey, in the past we have made all these mistakes, it's because we hold this value. Now let's change to this. And then you have a 180-degree change,
right,
where it really disrupts the equilibrium. And that's when you have culture shock and all that. So what we encourage how to manage polarity is to take... So first of all, know how to identify the early warning signs,
mm-hmm,
to know, okay, when are we doing too much of one value?
Actually, that's really interesting. I just want to hop on that real quick, because right now I feel like the imagery in my head is sort of like the way that a lot of organizations or companies approach trying to course correct is like a pendulum, where it's like one extreme to the other. You know, you either have to be right at the end or the other end.
Yep.
But what you're describing is more like walking a tightrope, where you're making minor adjustments to keep that balance, right?
Correct.
On that field.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So after you identify the early warning signs,
mm-hmm,
to prevent you from swinging so drastically,
right,
we introduce you to use this called little action steps. So let's say you value order in your organization and you realize that the morale is down and so on and so forth, and you start seeing the early warning signs and you want to prevent your people from leaving, which is a bad, very bad outcome, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the little action steps you can do? Let's think about it. Talk to people and have one-on-one, have teen stand-ups. All this will help you to mitigate and not introduce a drastic change.
Mm. And I think also what's important to note about polarity as well is the fact that you cannot sacrifice one for the other, right? You have to have both things. You have to have both order and flexibility, for example. A couple of examples as well that you have provided is like profitability versus sustainability, inclusivity versus decisiveness, like you said earlier, accountability versus generosity, right? So those are all things that they both simultaneously work in tandem and sort of against each other at the same time.
Yep.
But you need both of them.
Yes.
That's really interesting. And also, I think the other point of this is sometimes I think when it comes to, again, that sort of course correction that we're talking about, I think some organizations or, entering leaders might be like, okay, we'll make this one big change and everything will be fixed, which is so not the case, right? It's it's a process. It's something that takes, constant adjustment, I think, over like a long-term period, right?
Yes, yes.
Mm, okay.
The very reason why you have a polarity situation that you are facing is because it's fundamentally rooted in people's values. And when that's the... Because our behaviors are affected by our emotions and our emotions are driven by our values. So when people carry certain values, whatever people say will change. They want to change or they want to achieve... Somehow it will still be bringing back to the value. And that's why when you face a polarity, it's always a situation where you feel like, man, we're stuck at this again. Man, we're talking about this again. Haven't we talked about this? Haven't we had situation like this? So it's not what the things, it's not about the things that are happening, but it's actually what are the values that people are really holding.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, it's time to take a short break for some messages. But after that, I will continue my conversation with Xiao Cheng Wong, Fellowship Manager at Acumen Academy Malaysia, here on Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9.
Burning for more. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Listening to Raise Your Game, I'm Christine Wong. I'm here with a fellow Wong, Xiao Cheng Wong, specifically Fellowship Manager of Acumen Academy Malaysia. Not related, just a funny coincidence. We're talking today about managing polarity. What that means essentially is polarity are essentially two interdependent opposites, so values that seem to work against each other but also are both necessary and can work in tandem towards a shared goal. Sounds a little bit confusing, but of course, go back and listen to the first part of this if you missed that. But essentially, that's what it is. And so before the break, we talked a little bit about some examples of polarity. So stuff like profitability versus sustainability, inclusivity versus decisiveness, order versus flexibility, and how all of those work together. But they have a sort of tension that you have to balance over a long term to make sure that things run smoothly, essentially. So I think before the break, you actually mentioned that in cases where you encounter this, you have little action steps. And I would love to go more into detail about that. You know, for those listening who feel, you know, that really describes our organization or maybe a problem in my life where there are these two opposing values and I don't really know how to navigate that. What are the like tips and tricks, essentially?
Sure. Before we have the little action steps, I think... A very important part of this is to really identify what is the value of the other person holding. And I think that is, if you can work past that, it's a huge mental leap because we are very caught to just think that I'm the champion because you are now facing another champion. And then now when we are thinking about, okay, now what are the little action steps that I need to take so that we can... move a little bit along between these two values to find the balance. I think it's really depending on the situations that you are facing. So if you're talking about you're dealing with a team and you are sort of like the leader, then what are the little things that you can do before you impose a culture change or change a policy, for example? But if you're talking about, let's say polarity can also happen within yourself.
Yeah.
So we have, let's say, generosity versus accountability. How can I keep someone accountable to what this person has committed to or has said that they want to accomplish versus how much generosity do I want to give to this person to allow this person to learn, make mistakes and grow? And how do I balance these two? And what are the little action steps that I can take if this person is basically experiencing the negative impact of these two values?
Mm.
And I think some examples that I can think of would be, let's say the person is experiencing too much generosity mm-hmm. from me. That person is basically given excuses or reasons when this person is not doing what he or she is supposed to do. Then my little action steps to make sure I move to a little bit of the accountability bit would be, let's have a chat. You know, we have this tool in Acumen that we share. It's called Courageous Conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's a tool for adaptive leadership. What when you want to be an effective leader, when you want to mobilize change among your stakeholders, you need to know how to take courageous conversation. And I think a lot of us in Malaysia, us Malaysians, are so humble and generous that sometimes we are afraid to have difficult conversations. Maybe not everyone, but I'm certainly one of them.
No, 100%. Can confirm, extremely non-confrontational. I think this also comes from this... From, I don't know if this is something maybe cultural, maybe this is something that is more influenced by sort of like a kind of like an Asian mindset in a way. It's that feeling of you want to like save face, you don't want to potentially embarrass the other person, you don't want to rock the boat necessarily, right? It almost kind of feels like sometimes having those conversations sometimes feels as though, you know, this is not important enough to have a conversation about this because I will just deal with it quietly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's an excuse we make for ourselves.
Yeah.
But basically our fear is to disrupt the harmony or we just don't have the courage.
But if you don't address the issue, there's no harmony to be had, right?
Correct. So it just keeps happening and then you face a bigger and bigger polarity everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is stuff that, you know, on like a personal level, I'm someone that values punctuality a lot. I show up to places on time, sometimes too on time, sometimes early. I'm the kind of person that's like a backup plan for a backup plan for a backup plan, that sort of thing. And I had to have a very serious conversation with a peer of mine who was the opposite, very flexible, but would show up late constantly. And the thing that I was trying to figure out was like, I you know, on a surface level, I get why that bothers me. But also, what is going on, right? So, and it's that kind of like, you know, a lot of people would just leave it and just be like, ah, like, they're late all the time, you know, whatever. I don't want to scold them or I don't want to have that. But I was like, this really bothers me and I need to know. I need to know what your take is on this. And it turns out, I found out that, you know, this person, first of all, lived a lot farther away than I thought that they did. So that was like one factor. Then another factor was the fact that they actually had some other commitments that they didn't tell me about necessarily. So I didn't know where they were coming from. I didn't know that, you know, I'm part of like a very, you know, a busy schedule. And in my head, I was like, I have nothing else to do. So, you know, that's sort of like I kind of take one day, like one commitment at a time. They're the kind of person who like will put like eight different things into their day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so having that chat, you know, like, am I going to keep... you know, am I going to start showing up late to things? No. And are they going to be someone who's become super rigid? No, right? But it's, again, finding that balance of, like, I have to be more graceful to them to understand their perspective, but it's also, like, they need to put in some effort to actually show me that they're making an effort as well. And so that's the kind of conversation on, like, that personal level. But, you know, I think when it comes to the workplace sometimes, that tension gets even worse because there is that veneer of kind of professionalism where you're not sure to what extent you can talk to someone and not criticize, but like to address a problem without it feeling like an attack, right?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I think that's precisely the point because your job is on the line and you worry about your reputation, you worry about the relationship with the person that you need to have this conversation with. So what do you do, right? I think for me, my little action steps when it comes to this is to write an email first.
Okay.
Because I think it really depends on what is the little action steps that works for you and what will allow you to start taking. So it's not too risky and too scary for you that you don't dare to do it.
I think it depends on your personal communication style a lot as well,
yes.
right? So some people would prefer to have like a face-to-face chat, but for you, maybe an email is the first like step towards getting your thoughts down.
Correct. So write, for me, is write an email, let's say, just say that I would like to have a chat, but before we meet, you know, these are my thoughts. And because I know that if I meet face to face, confrontation is very scary for me. I will just be agreeing to everything the other person say without having the courage to voice my opinions out. So I think is to really be creative, to think about what works for you, and at the same time can really communicate your points across. And like you shared your examples, right? It's really finding the middle ground, understanding the other person, really. And instead of saying, hey, this person is always like that lah, and then I give up on this already.
Right.
But when you have that conversation, you know how to move forward. And both of you know, oh, I didn't know you're struggling with this. You know, I didn't see your point before.
I think also sometimes, you know, it may not even be something that has any external factors. Like a lot of us, I think, have, you know, our values are part of what makes our intrinsic personality. So sometimes there may not be external factors influencing that kind of behavior that we need to like manage. But as long as, you know, there's that awareness that that issue has been brought up, right?
Yes.
You know, I think that's what's important, of both parties need to know what's going on so that they can at least make an effort to find a balance. Like, and I think, you know, you can only do so much as well as an individual person. You can put in that effort, and if they don't respond, that's whatever it is, right? But at least you have put forward this issue. You've try to kind of solutionize a little bit more rather than to just kind of keep quiet and keep it to yourself and get tense by yourself.
Correct. Yeah.
100%. Okay. So I think, you know, from here, I would love to know if people are interested in learning more about managing polarities and learning more about Acumen Academy and what you guys do, where can they find this information? Where can they find maybe some resources on this?
Sure. You can go on to acumenacademy.org. Basically, we have lots of free online courses that focus on starting from storytelling to change, to polarity, to financial model for the social impact world. And there are also lots of master classes by world-renowned speakers as well. Some of the classes are paid. Most of the classes are free. And also, we also run the fellowship program where every year we select about 10 to 20 leaders who are in the space of influencing change and positive social change to build a more just and sustainable and inclusive Malaysia.
Fantastic. Love that so much. Thank you very much for coming in and speaking to me today all about managing polarity.
Thank you, Christine. Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking to Xiao Cheng Wong, Fellowship Manager at Acumen Academy Malaysia, all about managing polarity today. If you have missed any of today's conversation, of course, you can find us on our app. Our app is available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. And you can head over to bfm.my to listen to this podcast and many, many more. You're tuned in to BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.